Welcome to this episode of the Medical Affairs Professional Society podcast series, Elevate. I'm your host, Garth Sundem, Communications Director at MAPS, and today we're talking about emerging trends in continuing medical education with David Kemp, Accreditation Manager at Wiley, Jeff Covey, Associate Director for Independent Medical Education at Wiley, and Dr. Eva Thalman, ex-medical affairs at Janssen and now an independent consultant. This episode is sponsored by Wiley. The views expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily represent their organizations. So, Jeff, what's going on with CME? We've seen things go from the standard 1 or 2 day in-person meeting to other stuff. Catch us up on how CME is evolving.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thanks, Garth. And really pleased to be on the show today. I think one of the biggest shifts in recent times has been the move towards online learning, which has, of course, expedited during COVID. This has been driven by other factors, too. I think most notably the time pressures that HCPs faced, which in turn then has driven changes in HCP consumption preferences for medical education. I think if we think about how we consume content outside of medical education, this has changed radically over the past decade. We only have to sort of look at the rise of on-demand streaming services for music and TV, films, or, of course, the evolution of social media platforms with that rise of short-form content. So if we look at the medical education landscape, I think what we're seeing is some of these reflections here, such as this desire for the shorter sort of bite-sized content forms that are available on demand and that are accessible from multiple devices and platforms. I think that's really key, that people are looking for content not just in one place but from multiple sources. However, we're in an age where we are witnessing a content overload. So with so much content and so many channels available, I think what's really key is credibility. So it's vital that healthcare professionals are able to access, reliable, independent education from trusted sources, mm-hmm. which is where, providers such as us here at Wiley, but also others, can play a really crucial role. So I think, what we could all agree is that digital brings with it the relative ease to measure and report on data, with these activities and these programs. However, I think also what's critical is that we engage with the right audiences, quality, not necessarily quantity of audiences, and to ensure that we address HCP's learning needs, through robust educational needs assessments with the programs designed to drive knowledge gain and behavioral change. So I think for me, those are the sort of the key shifts. There's still a place very much so for longer programs, the live in-person events, longer courses. But I think one of those major shifts has been to online and has been to the availability of short form and bite-sized content, almost a multi-format approach, let's say.
That's interesting. So maybe as we shift more towards bite-sized and consumable and online, we have to confront the credibility problem, or not problem, challenge, that comes with more bite-sized content. But Eva and David, what trends are you noticing with CME initiatives?
Yeah, no, I think actually it is. And hello, everybody, and thank you for the invitation. I think Jeff already summed it up very nicely. I actually have to say, I see also a trend now immediately post-COVID. Again, the pendulum goes back a little bit, and all of a sudden we want to be again into face-to-face meeting. So I think what we might have missed during COVID and where we need to make more efforts from a digital perspective is this whole social learning. So that we not only go in and have, and I agree actually with shorter programs, so we cannot transfer face-to-face, one-to-one to digital, this doesn't work, we know it, but also to keep and to build communities of learning who can work digitally together. And it's not only you go in a webinar, you listen to a podcast, or you do a learning model. So I think this social aspect of learning we need to bring into digital, which I think is, really crucial. And this is why we wanted to go back to face to face, just this one aspect.
David, what do you think?
Hi, and thank you for having me. I think in addition to what Jeff mentions about bite-sized learning and what Eva is saying about the desirability of translating that social collaborative component online, we're also seeing an increase in uptake for self-directed activities. For Wiley, this can be earning credits through completing peer review or point of care internet searching and learning activities that allow for reflection on trusted content and can be collaborative for already taking place within the bounds of professional practice. Essential Evidence Plus is a point of care database that offers CME historically, and we would see this program number in the hundreds for credit claims annually. But now, with an increase over the past few years, it's tracking in the thousands. What I find interesting here is that as part of this process, we ask what learners we're trying to determine during the activity. Treatment and diagnosis is always the number one and two, but a response that's grown significantly in the past few years has been teaching our learning tactics, suggesting to us that professionals aren't just out to expand their own knowledge base to improve patient outcomes, but to expand their communication skills and capabilities as educators for others as well.
So what I'm hearing are a lot of ideas. It sounds like, pre-COVID, we had something that was fairly settled. And of course, it was still evolving a little bit, but, COVID just fractured it, right? And now it's almost like the possibilities are endless. I'm hearing social learning. I'm hearing small, bite-sized, consumable, self-directed online learning. Are there approaches that are emerging from this fractured space that are successful? Like when you're creating educational activities or programs, what strategies, what approaches have actually been successful for you? Ed, anyone, I can point to someone, but go ahead. Eva, I see you. Go for it.
No, I actually have to say, in my experience, the more learner-centric a program is, and the clearer a program is of what should be the learning outcome, what is expected from the learner, the more successful it is. If it's just a little bit, I'm sorry for the German expression, wishy-washy program, doesn't really go down too well. So the learner centricity, I think, is really important.
Wait, wishy-washy is a German expression? Can you say that for
Wishy-washy.
us in German? What do you say?
Wishy-washy.
Oh Okay. Jeff, David, what's emerging as success? So learner-centric, all right? Not just what we want to teach people, but what the learner wants to know, what they're going to get from it. So maybe making that promise very explicit. Come to this program, you will have this learning outcome. What else is emerging from this fractured space? Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, so for us, I think, the mixed format approach has been hugely successful. As educators, it's critical that that source material is always based on the peer-reviewed evidence. However, the format in which the information is disseminated, should be varying, I feel, to allow us to meet the needs of a broad range of consumption preferences. So I think at Wiley, one of our key strengths lies with our global society partnerships. This coupled with the multi-channel communication approach and rich medical journal portfolios has helped us to ensure that we reach the right communities with our educational content. Installing that confidence amongst our audience as a credible provider. What worked well recently was a multi-component program that we delivered in partnership with the American Cancer Society. It was really designed to address specific knowledge gaps relating to hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. For this program, we used a sort of a mix of content format. So we didn't just rely on one activity to educate the audience. We delivered a range of different activities in different lengths, different formats, so that we could engage with a range of clinicians. So you had a longer, for example, webinar and journal article based content for those who wanted that sort of deeper dive into the subject matter. But you also had those sort of takeaway elements, for example, like a quick downloadable infographic or a short 1 minute summary, that for those who were interested but didn't necessarily want to have to consume all of the detail, that they could be a part of that program as well. So I think for us it was what that success was demonstrated with those formats that reach multiple touch points. So, you know, you could engage a range of learners who had an interest in the subject matter, rather than just saying, okay, well, if you're a specialist, yep, you can have the deep dive, but for everybody else, well, sorry, there isn't anything available. So that's what we wanted to try to avoid, to make it an inclusive program that reached a broad range of healthcare professionals.
There's a couple of things I want to dig in on there, but it's interesting that you identified the knowledge gaps. You looked at how your peer-reviewed material could address those knowledge gaps, and then you looked at what multiple formats you could use to deliver that peer-reviewed information to fill those knowledge gaps. David, did you want to chime in with another strategy or approach that seems like it's becoming, I don't know, a best practice, or at least has been successful from your perspective?
So, I mean, this may just be reiterating the thought that, you know, the best strategy is to ultimately know your target audience, know the practice gaps that would be beneficial to your audience, and adapt format as needed, as, you know, a final step before the activity development process begins. You know, we've had success in the hematology space through not necessarily, you know, a typical format, but an ongoing podcast series where we have not just individual activity level objective to pursue, but we also have a set of overarching program objectives that are obtainable through continuous participation, right? Yeah. So strategies to not just provide a single activity, but sort of a portfolio of activities that are particularly relevant to a target audience.
Mm-hmm.
The other thought about that is more towards what your activities can be offering that is of specific need to that target audience, right? So the addition of maintenance of certification credits or NPI tracking for credit level state licensure, it areas in which you can pursue that would be of particular interest to that audience that you're trying to court.
I'm hearing audience centric. Mm-hmm. And I've heard about that podcast format, but it just never seems to work out very well, does it, David? No, I'm kidding, because we're on a podcast right now. Okay, so
can I add something to it, because I was actually looking into the prostate cancer program Jeff just talked about. And I think there's another thing what people really like. I mean, and I also saw it out of the survey you guys really did. People like to understand, to immediately, you know, get the newest trends, the newest data out of big conferences. Mm-hmm. They very often actually go back, listen to the presentations, but what they also like is actually discussions between experts, between their peers, in how to apply the data, in how to treat the patients. And I think that's something which is a little bit, you know, I would say we don't do it often enough at the congresses, because there is no time. We normally have this huge audiences, data presentation, eminent professor in the first row asks one question, end of discussion. But I think what the digital formats can bring actually audiences together to discuss this data and to understand it and to give the time to ask the questions. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because we're in this data-rich environment where HCPs and everyone else can usually get the information that they want or need. And so I wonder, and I guess this is just a general question for the group, but I wonder if we need to be designing CMEs also from a perspective of what they can't just supply themselves with on their own. You know, and maybe that's thought leadership or its context or its perspective or its, I don't know, socially generated expertise. Are we looking beyond just delivering the peer-reviewed data at this point because they could get it on their own? Or are we not? Are we still looking for better ways to deliver the peer-reviewed data?
I think what Ava said, you know, in terms of having that practical application and what discussion is critically important. You know, the peer-reviewed data is always at the center. That's what the discussion is based on, right? That's the foundation. But it's then, of course, you know, well, what can we build? You know, what can we build out from that? I think one of the other things that we're seeing, and you know, that was highly prevalent at the January ISMAP meeting, the European ISMAP meeting, was the involvement of patient contributions to medical education. So, you know, is that could that be a patient author on a clinical paper, for example, or even I've seen recently, you know, patient contributors in medical education programs to HCPs. So, for example, where they're sharing their experiences, their key questions, you know, in an educational program that's designed for, you know, healthcare professionals, and it's getting across the patient perspective and patient voice, you know, to the healthcare professionals. So it's not always, okay, here's the data, this is the latest treatment, this is this, this is that. But actually, it's thinking about it from a different angle, and how can we as educators or providers of continuing a medical education also educate healthcare professionals on, you know, the patient perspective and what's front and center for the patient with regards to their treatment. You know, as a I guess as a healthcare professional, you're always, you know, focused on you know, one perhaps one set of criteria, but the patient view may be very different. So that is definitely an emerging trend, I think, that we're going to see more and more of in educational programs. You know, as well, not as we progress through this year, but for years to come, is that involvement, because it's very much a key theme at present.
Oh, I'm glad
We
you.
also might see more patients actually who look at the primary data because they are more freely accessible on the internet, and then go back and challenge their clinicians. So they also need to have the skills to argue with the patients, which actually, Geoff, I'm not completely, you know, it's always the peer review data which are in the center. I'm just reminding everybody we were in 2021 with the COVID vaccinations, and all the world discussed data which were not at all peer reviewed. And I think at this point it was also really important to have experts coming in and to explaining not only to peers but also to the general public, how do we see the data, what does it mean? Yeah, so I would even say we might see these disruptions more in the future, because this peer review, and then we discuss it a little bit pre-COVID, and then we got, you know, really disrupted by the pandemic.
Boy, new. So not only new formats, but new voices and new, I don't know, center for the content. Yeah, I've heard a lot of practical tips through our discussion here already, but I wanted to give everyone a chance to go around the horn here and offer maybe one. If you already used up your practical tip, feel free to pass. But let's just go around. What would you say are practical tips for designing and delivering CME programs?
Be inclusive. That's not just advice for designing activities for your target audience in terms of accessibility and readability, but be inclusive with your content collaborators as well. One strategy we're now trying incorporates AI in a review of published literature in the context of an activity's practice gap and statement of educational need, to create a prospective faculty list driven by relevance and expertise rather than through traditional networks.
Okay, inclusivity. What else do we got for a practical takeaway?
I think one, well, couple of, I've had it over thing on the thing podcast, but think of your format. So think of your audience. So in terms of, who you want to engage, on the one hand, that could be formats and the varying consumption preferences that they have. But also think of the, when you are putting out an education program, the quality of your audience. It's easy in this day and age, I think, to deliver metrics that say, well, hey, yes, we reached 20,000, 20,000 participations, etc. But what's the actual quality of that audience? Are you actually reaching your target audience? So I think thinking about those key partnerships that you can have with your program, that I go back to the American Cancer Society example, where like you're partnering with a key organization that has a relevant and engaged audience that is seeking out in education, so that to make sure that what you are delivering, aligns and ends is relevant for them. So I think that's super important that you focus on delivering education A to the right audience, but also one that delivers impact, and we're not just chasing these vanity metrics where you're just looking for numbers of several thousands, but actually what we want to focus on is delivering really good quality education that encourages changes in practice, that measurable change in practice. So I think that's definitely something to think about when engaging in medical education activities.
All right, not just reach, but impact. Eva, did you want to offer? We already got social learning from you.
No, I see. I actually am a big believer in social media, in social learning. But I also think, we talked about learner centricity and the different formats. And I think the other aspect is we need to give our educators, our experts, the right skills to manage the different formats, the different media, and to be in managing it and having the skills in actually being more learner-centric. So I think that's another angle we need to look at, because it's certainly not anymore you are behind the podium and in front of you are 500 people. You need to have other skills, working through the lens, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's another aspect we should really look at.
All right. Well, thank you, David, Jeff, and Eva, for joining us today. To learn more about how your organization can partner with Wiley, visit wiley.com. MAPS members, don't forget to subscribe. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Medical Affairs Professional Society podcast series, Elevate.